You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
And I don't know about you, but I'm definitely in the spirit of fall right now. Because the leaves are turning, and unfortunately they're falling, and that's the part that I don't like. But everything smells like pumpkin spice and apple pie and... I'm trying to enjoy the things that I like about it. And I don't know, fall is not my favorite season, but what about you?
It is absolutely my favorite season, but...
Is it?
Yeah, it's, you know, because of the clothes, the feeling, the aesthetic, the colors, everything about it I love. It's my perfect kind of temperature. But the thing that is that winter was so heinous in the Midwest last year...
Yes.
That all that fall is reminding me of this year is how horrible it's going to get. And thus it's taking away its appeal.
Yeah, I am totally with you in that mindset. One of the big reasons why I don't like fall is the fact that it is a reminder that everything is going to die and get snowed on and we're going to be frozen for a few months. And I'm just not looking forward to that at all.
But one good thing about fall is definitely Halloween and all of the pseudo-terrifying things that happen around Halloween. And I was actually browsing the internet the other day, and like I always do every day. And before we get into our topic, I found an article that came out a couple years ago on Blaster, and it's called The 13 Terrifying Star Trek Episodes Worth Beaming Down for Halloween.
Fantastic. Okay. Well, what did you think about this list now? Do you think it's accurate? Is it good? Because when I think Halloween, it's just because on the Ready Room we recorded Cat's Paw, which has a Halloween feel to it. And I'm thinking, you know, I don't really want to do any more Halloween Star Trek, but maybe you could convince me with this list.
No, I don't think this is that great of a list because there's a few in Deep Space Nine when you're like, really? Is that really what we're going with that are just like some of these are quote unquote scary, but also horrible episodes. And so I thought we would just list them real quick. So right off the bat is The Man Trap from TOS. And it's the first episode ever to broadcast. And it has its shapeshifter and it's a lot of suspense, a lot of screaming. The creature's true form is kind of scary. And and I mean, I can never really take TOS too terribly serious. So
yeah, not anymore.
But the thing is, like, the beauty of Halloween is that not everything has to be scary. It can just be Halloween kitschy like Hocus Pocus.
True.
And so the next one on the list is The Enemy Within. And it's kind of the Jekyll and Hyde thing where it has the good and evil side of Kirk. And then you have Wolf in the Fold.
Okay, now that one makes sense.
See, this one, I think this is the first TOS one that kind of makes sense because...
Yeah, I've been shaking my head the whole time. Listeners can't see that, but I've just kind of, really?
See, it involves Scotty, a murdered girl, no memory, and it has disembodied voices. I think that's a good time for Halloween.
Yes, that is a very good selection for a Halloween Star Trek episode. Okay, what else have they got?
Then we graduate to The Next Generation with Night Terrors.
Oh.
And for those of you who don't remember, here's the explanation on Blaster. Perhaps best known as the episode in which the dead bodies sit up and stare at Dr. Crusher, Night Terrors leads the way for Next Generation. You'd think if they found a derelict ship floating about with everyone on board murdered, they'd get the hell out of there, but they don't, and the crew loses the ability to tell the difference between what is real and what's only in their heads. And this is one of those episodes where it's like the visuals are very Halloween-esque, but just not that great of an episode.
Yeah, I'll give it a pass. How about you?
But then we get into some better ones, and we have Schisms.
Okay, now you're talking.
See, that's a great one. And,
absolutely.
If you don't know that one, look it up, watch it, it's fun. And then one of my favorites, Frame of Mind.
Now, I would not have thought about this one.
See, I love this one because, like, this is where Riker's in a play, but it's a play within a play, and then he's going crazy imagining he's in the play, but then he's really in an alien mental hospital, and he can't tell what's real and what's not, and he's like, am I going crazy? I'm not insane!
Like that. Yeah.
Very good, very good. And, oh, and then we go on to probably the best Star Trek Halloween episode ever, and that would be Genesis.
Now, okay, do you think that one's better than Schisms?
I think this one is better than Schisms because it has spooky monsters and jump scares. Schisms doesn't really have that.
You know, I really disagree. I think Schisms has such a good, creepy, make the hair on the back of your neck just prickle up kind of a feel, whereas this is more visually spooky, I suppose.
Well, just feel comfortable in the fact that you're wrong.
Fine, I will.
I'm totally just messing with you. I think that these three TNG ones, once you get past Night Terrors, like Schisms and Frame of Mind and Genesis, are just fantastic. But then we go into Deep Space Nine, and you have the episode Whispers, and it's the one where I think this is a good story. I think it needed some better execution, but it's one where everyone's just not acting quite normal. This is more like a Twilight Zone episode. This is definitely like a Twilight Zone episode of Deep Space Nine.
That's a great way of putting it.
But I don't know if I'd call it a Halloween-esque one. And then we move into something that is just probably one of the worst episodes of Deep Space Nine I've ever seen, in Distant Voices. Do you remember that episode? It's the one where Julian is attacked by a telepathic alien, and he gets trapped inside his own mind, and then he gets older and older with gray hair, and he starts like shaking and walking around with a hunch, and then all of a sudden he gets attacked by tennis balls.
You know, I don't necessarily relate that one to Halloween at all. No, that's not working for me at all.
But then we go on to Impok Nor, which is pretty spooky and scary just because it's exactly like Tarok Nor, Deep Space Nine, but it's empty and desolate, and there's noises behind the corner, and there's attacks going on, and this one would be cool because it's a bunch of people roaming around a dark, empty station.
Now that makes a lot more sense because of the whole creep factor.
Absolutely. And now we move into the Voyager segment, and we start off the Voyager one with Darkling.
Okay, yeah, I can see it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just don't like Darkling that much. I don't think it's that scary or spooky, but okay.
Yeah, it's I think it just goes to like the TOS episode with the whole Jekyll and Hyde type thing. I think it's a trope that's used a lot in Halloween. But then we go on to something that I think that we can agree on, and that's the Haunting of Deck 12.
If you're a kid.
Well, yeah, if you're a kid. I mean, come on. I mean, it has the word right in the title, the Haunting of Deck 12. That's
it's
pretty
true.
Halloween-ish.
I mean, it's a ghost story, right? That's perfect for Halloween.
Halloween is a child's holiday. Let's just face that. Or at least that's what it's become.
I suppose.
And then we end the 13 episode arc with an Enterprise episode and Impulse.
Okay, now I gotta confess, I've not seen this one. What happens?
This one is kind of like the zombie episode of Star Trek. This is third season. The Enterprise has to go investigate I think it's called the Celea. It's a Vulcan ship called the Celea.
Oh, the Vulcan zombies. Okay, never mind. I have seen this. I just didn't put the episode to the title. Okay, good pick. Good pick.
Yeah. And this one has the best Star Trek intro out of every episode, in my personal opinion. Like, this one is where they wheel T'Pol in on a stretcher, and it's really dark, and they go into sickbay, and she's screaming, and they're like, hold her down, and they're trying to figure it out, and she's screaming at them, going, I'll kill you, and just, like, all this gruff voice, and she grabs Archer by the throat, and he goes, like, doctor, and then she just gives this blood-curdling scream, like, cut to black, smash cut. And then you're just like,
Yeah, instead of watching this episode, I just want to hear you reenact the whole thing, because that was great.
That's what we'll do as a special bonus episode, where instead of a commentary, it's just going to be me going, okay, so we open up on a space field, okay, and then the Enterprise is just flying through. That's just going to be me for the entire episode.
That's awesome. We could do sort of like the whole Breaking Bad scene where Badger talks about a Star Trek script. We could do it in that style, and I could be Skinny Pete, like, dude, no, that's Voyager, you know.
Oh, and it pisses me off because in that Breaking Bad episode, they got it wrong.
I think they did on purpose.
Oh, it made me so angry. Dude, that's Voyager. And it's it's Deep Space Nine.
Of course it is. And we know that. And I think they did that just to piss us off.
Well, it worked. Yeah. All right, people at home. So that's your 13 episodes that you can watch in your Halloween season. Take it for what it's worth. Not that much.
And of course, 13 episodes had to have been picked on purpose, that number.
On purpose, absolutely. Well, Shar, how about you tell us about the subject that we're going to be talking about today?
So what we're talking about this week, actually, I think when you were talking about frame of mind, what got me thinking was projections in the whole, you know, is this real? Is this not? Is it a thing? Because we're talking, and this is a very roundabout way of talking about what we're talking about, but that's the way my mind is going this week. We are talking about Trek actors who are directing. They're in the director's chair and they are directing other episodes of Star Trek. Now, these could be TNG actors, these could be DS9 folks, could be Voyager folks, and then, of course, they went on to do bigger and different things. And so we're going to talk all about this, but the reason why projections kind of got into my head is because Jonathan Frakes, that was the first episode that he directed of Voyager.
And that was the first episode of Voyager to be directed by a Star Trek alum who was in front of the camera.
Correct. Now, of course, he got his directing debut in TNG.
That's right. It was the episode The Offspring, season 3, episode 16, that aired on March 12th, 1990. Now, the reason why that is important is because Jonathan Frakes basically made it possible for all of these other people to direct. Because here's the thing, is that this had never happened before. It didn't happen in TOS. Like, Shatner didn't direct an episode, Nimoy didn't direct an episode, and Frakes insisted on directing an episode of TNG. And this didn't happen until the middle of season 3. What they say is that Frakes went to Star Trek Academy, or what they call it, Star Trek School, or
Director
the Star Trek
school
Film School.
Or something? Yeah.
Yeah, the Star Trek Director School, something like that. I know I'm not getting it right, but it's something to that effect, where what he did was, before he just said, I want to direct, he shadowed as many people as he could. He shadowed the director. He shadowed a producer. He sat in on editing sessions. He sat in on costume sessions. He sat in on writing sessions. And he did as much as he could before he said, okay, I want to direct now. Because that way, once he went to Rick Berman or Micropiller or whomever, Gene, at that time.
Maybe, yeah.
Before he could say, I want to direct, this way he can say, listen, I know how this works. I know how this works. I know how you guys like it. I know how you guys want to do it. And so he kept asking and they kept saying no. He kept asking. And finally they said, all right, we'll give you one.
They caved.
And he knocked it out of the park with The Offspring, which is one of the best TNG episodes, in my opinion.
It's certainly up there for me, too. Yeah, it's a very well-written and well-directed episode. Also, great performances and a very memorable TNG episode at that.
So he got very lucky with the timing of that script and when they said yes, because the directors don't really get to choose the scripts that they work on normally.
Right.
Normally, sometimes they do. But so because of that, and because he consistently did it and he did it well over the course of TNG, it opened it up for such people like LeVar Burton and Roxanne Dawson and all those other people that we know about.
Right. Yeah, he did open the door. He was the first, and he went on to direct 8 episodes total for TNG. And then for Voyager, he only did 3, starting with Projections, and then he did Partuition also in Season 2, and then Prototype later on.
All P words.
Yeah. Okay, so that's his theme. But, of course, when I think Jonathan Frakes directing, I think, of course, of Star Trek First Contact.
Yes.
That was the first movie directed by a member of the TNG cast.
And in many fans' opinion, the best TNG movie that was made.
Right. And a lot, I think Frakes gets a lot of credit for that, rightfully so.
Yeah, I do think so. I think, I mean, of course it's everybody. You know, it's it's the writer, it's the producers, it's the costumers, it's the set designers, of course it's the actors, but the director is the person who kind of blends all of that together.
Right. He's got to know like what's going on with everything.
Yeah. And so it's just, he directs a lot of TV today. He's a very successful TV director. I wish I could see him do more film, but c'est la vie.
Yeah, he's definitely got a directing career now, as do a lot of the people we're going to mention in this podcast. And so why don't we move on to the next person on our list? And that would be LeVar Burton, because he directed, of anybody else we're going to mention tonight, he directed more episodes of Voyager than anybody else.
He directed
eight episodes. And he directed an episode. Wait, no, he directed Ex Post Facto. He was the first one to direct a Voyager episode.
Oh, excuse me. I thought it was Frakes, but you're right. Yeah,
it's okay. Ex Post Facto. This is a lot to keep track of, just because there are so many of these actors who did get a chance directing. And like you said earlier, Frakes got the party started, but a lot of people joined in. So he directed Ex Post Facto. That was one of the very early season one episodes, right when the series was getting started. It's like episode 5, I believe. And for an outing, I would say LeVar Burton's debut on Voyager was not as successful as others were. Just because I think they had a great idea and it didn't quite work.
Yes, I do think it was a great idea, but I feel like the direction was pretty good, because like those camera angles that we saw from Tom's perspective and the whole murder mystery, and like I thought it was a very classic style of directing, but yeah, the execution kind of fell to the wayside. But how about you list the other episodes that he made, and then we can talk about them.
Yeah, sure, because things get a whole lot better from here. He directed Dreadnought, which is a great B'Elanna episode, as you know, The Raven, and then Timeless, the 100th episode, which is one of my absolute favorites. I mean, holy wow, did he get great performances out of Garrett Wong and Robert Beltran.
Yes, very much so. That's one of our favorites on TTJ.
Totally. So then, after that, 2 years later, he directed Live Fast and Prosper, as well as Nightingale. He directed Q2, and then Homestead, which was Neelix's Farewell.
So out of all of those, what would you say is your favorite? Would you say that Timeless is your favorite out of LeVar Burton's?
No doubt about it. I feel not only does LeVar Burton get to make a little cameo appearance in the episode, but the fact that he got such a great performance out of Beltran and Wong really made that episode. Those are two characters that unfortunately had kind of floundered around by season 5 when they got to the 100th episode, and really turned it into something. Got some serious passion out of those guys when normally they're a little more flatlined.
Yeah.
So how about you, though? Which was your favorite of these 8?
I'd have to say Timeless, but if I took Timeless out of it, I would say Dreadnought, because what Burton and the producers did, and very much what Roxanne Dawson did, is that it's mainly just her. It is mainly just her for a big chunk of the episode. It's her talking to herself.
Essentially
talking to herself. Like, we hear her voice as the computer voice, and it's still interesting. It's still engaging. And where it could, you know, it could be considered dull if it was just one person that was uninteresting, but with good direction and good acting, it made the episode fly. And so I think LeVar Burton was a big part of that.
No doubt. And that is not an easy thing to do. And not that I've done it, but it could have totally failed. It could have been an absolute flop. And so it took a lot of skill to really make that work. And like you said, credit to all of them for making it soar rather than fall on its face.
So to go further down on our list in descending order of how many people have directed, who's next on our list?
Well, the next person on our list after LeVar Burton, with Jonathan Frakes directing 3, we're going up a little bit to the middle ground for second place, and that is Robert Duncan McNeil.
Good old Robbie.
Gotta love Robbie Duncan McNeil. How can you not? First off, he's Flyboy.
And he's native to Voyager.
He is, but this is another guy who's had an exceptional directing career during and then after Voyager. He directed 4 episodes, and I would say that he directed some really good ones. He started with Sacred Ground in 1996. That was his very first one. And then following year, he directed Unity. 2 years later, Someone to Watch Over Me. Again, another really good one. But then he caps it off in Voyager with Body and Soul.
Oh, that's
so
right.
So he got some good ones.
He did get some good ones. Now, was Robert Duncan McNeil the first Voyager alum to direct a Voyager episode?
Yes, as a matter of fact, he was. And I think he did the same thing that Frakes did. He went through the directing school of Star Trek. He put in that extra time to see what happens behind the scenes, know what he's doing. And he was the first one who got that chance.
I think it's funny because Jonathan Frakes playing Riker is my favorite Star Trek character of all time and definitely my favorite on TNG. And then Robert Duncan McNeil, Tom Paris for a long time. Like when I was watching Voyager, Tom Paris was definitely my favorite character on Voyager. I don't know who I could say now, but it's funny because I kind of gravitate towards those types of characters. And what's funny about it is when I was growing up and I went through film school and I'm in video production now, those are the two people behind the scenes that kind of trailblaze the way for the Star Trek actors to direct. And it's just, I don't know, it's just kind of funny about how I kind of gravitate towards that. So we listed Robbie's four. Out of those four, which one's your favorite?
Ooh, okay, this is a lot tougher than any of the others we've considered thus far. I really like Sacred Ground for its message and its exploration, but Body and Soul and Someone to Watch Over Me are both just really awesome standouts. Man! I think on any given day, if I have to just pick an episode, if I was going to watch it, I would just flip a coin, because you can't lose.
Well, you got to pick which one.
Someone to Watch Over Me.
Yes, that ding ding, that's the correct
that's
answer.
That's the correct answer. Yeah, that's probably the most emotional but still awesome performance, well written of those selections. It's just incredibly well-roundedly good. I take it that's your pick as well.
Yeah, it is my pick as well, because Body and Soul is really great and it's really funny. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you look at greatness of a Star Trek episode, like it's a lot of fun to watch a humorous episode, but I want to see those dramatic performances. That's what really hits me home. And with Someone to Watch Over Me, you cannot get better than that ending where he's playing the piano by himself. And then all of a sudden you see Voyager just head off into the distance as those final piano keys play.
Yeah, that's true. That is kind of how Someone to Watch Over Me has that edge, is the emotional impact. Because it's tearing at my heartstrings. I know it is, as well as anybody else watching it. It is so incredibly good, and I feel so bad for the Doctor every time I watch it. So sad, so sad.
So on top, we have LeVar Burton with 8, then Robert Duncan McNeil with 4, mm-hmm. Jonathan Frakes with 3, and then we have a tie for 4th place.
Correct. We've got 3 people who directed 2 episodes apiece. How about if we do another Voyager alum, and that would be Robert Picardo?
Robert Picardo, yes. The 2 episodes that he did was Alter Ego and One Small Step. So we talked a little bit about Alter Ego earlier today. Now, that's a little strange to me because most of the time, when they give you an episode, they make sure it's a script where your character is very light.
Right, because you're busy doing other things that week.
Exactly. And so Alter Ego is definitely not a light episode for Robert Picardo. Now, I know that they did that with Jonathan Frakes in TNG, and they did it with Patrick Stewart in TNG. And then we have Avery Brooks, though, that kind of went against that trend where he directed Far Beyond the Stars, which is very much an Avery Brooks episode.
Very much. He's directing himself as well as everybody else.
Yeah, he's directing himself, mainly himself, though. And Robert Picardo did that with Alter Ego. But in One Small Step, he had very little to do.
This is true. So maybe after this, after having to do double duty, essentially, with Alter Ego, maybe he realized, okay, that wasn't such a smart idea. I don't want to do that again. I want to sleep at night. I would like to go home and see my kids. Maybe. I don't know. Now, here's the interesting with Robert Picardo is he doesn't have a whole lot of directing credits. In fact, just about all that is to his directing resume is Voyager. There's one other thing on IMDb, and it's some project called The Portal, which was just announced, and there's very little information about it. that's it. That's what he's got. He's continued to act, of course. And so maybe that's just what he prefers doing. But since we've talked so much about former Trek actors who went into directing careers, he's kind of gone against that trend now.
Yes, that's true. Because, yeah, if you look at the previous people that we've talked about, including one that we're going to talk about, all of them, except for Robert Picardo, have gone on to have very successful directing careers. And it sounds like this wasn't so much unsuccessful as in just didn't want to.
Right, yeah. I think Robert Picardo would be just absurdly good at anything he would want to do, no matter what it is. I just think it was a very deliberate choice. No, I prefer acting, and more power to him because he is an exceptional actor.
So of those two, it's funny because we talked about how Alter Ego isn't that great, but I think it's still better than One Small Step.
Oh, really? See, I would pick One Small Step over Alter Ego.
I didn't really like One Small Step because I thought it was a stretch for the Chakotay character.
I mean, I thought it was kind of mediocre, but I don't hate it. But then Alter Ego, I feel, is below average. So there you go.
There you go.
All right. Fair enough.
We have another to go on to our other tie, which is also another Voyager alum. Who is that?
Well, it's your favorite, of course. And that's Roxanne Dawson.
The two episodes that she directed was Riddles and Workforce Part 2.
Yes.
Now, you know how I feel about Workforce.
Yes.
I do not dig on it. I don't like it at all. I think it's a poorly written episode. I think it's a poorly executed episode. I think it's just plain boring. But Riddles, I think, is at least an interesting episode.
Yes, I do have to agree with you there. Riddles is probably a much more interesting episode than Workforce, especially Workforce Part 2. I feel like Part 1 for Workforce is much better than Part 2, but even so, I think Riddles is the clear winner here. Now, I do find it interesting that Roxanne Dawson had to fight a little harder to get into the director's chair than, say, Jonathan Frakes or Robert Duncan McNeil. She had to struggle for a long time to finally break down the wall and actually get a directing credit to her name. I mean, she was practically begging.
I think you mean glass ceiling.
I'm trying to put it mildly, but yeah, sexism here. Female directors are few and far between. And so to get her a chance, she really, 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 really had to fight for it.
Yeah, it's very much a male-dominated industry when it comes to directing. I've seen it firsthand. The film industry can be very sexist, especially in the director's chair. I don't even know if it's so much people don't think, like the men in charge, quote-unquote. I don't even know if it's they don't think a woman can handle it. I think it's the whole they don't know if it'll sell tickets. And then so that's trickled down to television. But the thing is, though, folks, obviously you and I know that's wrong. And hopefully our listeners know that's wrong as well. But after she moved on from Voyager, even though she only directed two episodes of Voyager, she went on to direct 10 episodes of Enterprise.
Yeah, and that even tops LeVar Burton, who I believe had eight. No, sorry, nine. He had nine. So he came close, but she wins.
But she wins when it comes to Enterprise.
Yeah, she did a lot of Enterprise. And Robbie Duncan McNeil did some Enterprise too, but not nearly as much as Roxanne Dawson. And she directed some of my favorites on Enterprise.
She did some really, really great stuff. And one of them was Dead Stop.
Yes, which... that's the one I wanted to mention right
yeah,
there.
I love Dead Stop. It's season 2, episode 4. And it's very much a Deus Ex Machina, but it's a very visual episode. And the thing is, we get a return of the Roxanne Dawson computer voice.
Yes, indeed. And hey, what's not to love about that? But she did direct a few others that were pretty darn cool too. I love the Andorian incident. That's a great early Enterprise episode. And then also E-Squared. Another
E-Squared,
favorite.
E-Squared, that is just a good, solid episode.
It really is.
E-Squared is fantastic. Yeah. Great visuals, great directing. And she also did Awakening. It's just a good Vulcan episode. There's a friend of mine on Twitter, and his handle is @EnterpriseExtra, And he was actually, and the reason why he's called that is because he was an extra in the episode Awakening. And yes, he said indeed. That not only was it amazing to be an extra on the show and meet everybody from Enterprise, but he got to meet Roxanne Dawson because she was the one who was directing the episode. So how cool is that? Not only do you get to be on the bridge of the Enterprise and meet everybody in the show, but you get to meet another alum just because they happen to be directing that episode.
Yeah, that is epic scorage right there. He's a lucky guy, and he knows it. Very, 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 very cool. Roxanne Dawson has not just directed Enterprise, though, since the Voyager days. I mean, if you go onto IMDb and look at her directing credits, holy whoa. I mean, she has done so many shows, it's ridiculous. She did Cold Case and Crossing Jordan. She's done The Mentalist several times. Vegas and Smash, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I mean, man, it's tons and tons and tons of directing credits. And I don't know, I find it fantastic because Rick Berman made it very difficult for her to get that very first Voyager episode. And he almost said, hey, we're not going to give you the chance to screw it up the next time. And look at what has happened. She's had a hell of a career, so more power to her. Speaking of talented people, let's go to the last person who is in our three-way tie of people who directed two episodes of Voyager. And that would be Andrew Robinson.
That's right. Andrew Robinson, most notably known as Garak from Deep Space Nine. The first episode he directed was a Deep Space Nine episode called Looking for Parmok in All the Wrong Places.
Oh, boy.
Which a lot of people like to hate on that episode, but I kind of like it.
I think it's kind of goofy fun. I wouldn't want DS9 to be like that every week, of course, but at the same time, Deep Space Nine can be so serious. It's kind of nice when they do let loose a little bit.
Yeah, it was season 5. It had Grilka in it, Quark in it. And Quark, like the actor Armin Shimerman, he learned pantomime from a master in order to get that down. That's why it looks so convincing, is because he did his research and his homework and his training. Nice. And this is the first time we see Dax and Worf hook up. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a nice way to ease him into it. And then he stayed a little sexy and then went into Blood Fever into Voyager, which we all know and love that episode.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. He kept the panting and the sweating going, if you will, in Blood Fever. And then he did Unforgettable.
That was which we just Voyager talked episode. About not too long ago, which was right, extremely which, forgettable.
Yeah, we don't need to repeat what we said. Just, nah. No worries about that. And then he did some episodes of Judging Amy, and that is his directing career thus far.
Well, there you go. And he also wrote a novel, which was all about Garak.
Imagine that. Well, Garak and Andrew Robinson, I feel, are one and the same in that they have many talents.
Plain, simple Garak. So of those two, it's obvious which one our favorite is. And that's definitely Blood Fever. But how about you give us our last one?
Okay, yes, we've got one more person and one more episode. And that would be Tim Russ.
Timmy Russ!
Yeah, directed one episode of Voyager, which was Living Witness, which I think is a pretty decent episode. I don't know about you.
I love that episode. I do. That would be our alternate universe episode, our mirror universe Voyager episode. That's as close as we're going to get to a mirror universe Voyager episode.
Yeah, no, I feel that's an interesting selection to give to a first-time director, but I feel like he did a fantastic job, and more power to him, because it did lead to further things later on. I mean, he's got a nice solid little list of directing credits on IMDb. And so he's done a little bit of both. He's kind of not quite followed the trend of other Trek actors. He hasn't gone exclusively into a directing career. He hasn't stayed exclusively in an acting career. He has done a little bit of both.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty versatile, and
he is. He's also a musician.
His talents know no end, and we hear him. I think more we hear him a lot because he does a lot of voice work as well, which I always impressed with people who do that and can do that convincingly. And it seems like he's always willing to lend his voice to the Star Trek universe. He did it for Elite Force, Elite Force 2, and Star Trek Online.
Okay, well, that is our list of Trek actors who directed Voyager episodes. And all of their directing credits combined make up 22 of the 168 Voyager episodes produced, which, if you do the math, is 13% of all of Voyager. That's a nice little chunk.
That's a big chunk, considering how many episodes there actually are.
Yeah, totally. And you got to consider the fact that people like Winrich Kolbe and Cliff Bull directed, you know, episodes in the double digits from TNG through Voyager and beyond. So to get them just, in, you know, squeezing in between those guys who were always on the set is kind of nice and refreshing. And then look at all that it led to. My goodness. We also want to thank, or we should thank Romy on Twitter for suggesting this topic for us, because she wrote in and suggested it. And if you have a topic that you think would be great for TTJ, we'd love to hear it. And there's several ways that you can contact us. You can go to trek.fm/contact and send a message to us. That'll arrive by email and we'll both receive that. You can go to Twitter. My handle is OTheProfanity, and Tristan, you are
The Insane Robin. And you can also call in and leave us a voicemail.
Yes, this happened a couple weeks ago. It was fantastic. So if you want to leave us a voicemail, we would love to hear your voice. And so you can do that as well. Okay. Well, Trek actors in the director's chair is not the only thing that we've been talking about here on Trek FM this week. And so here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Because we're basically pitching a story arc.
Right.
Like we're Babylon 5, and we've got this five-year arc.
Yeah.
But we're going to have a three-year plus maybe the cartoons plus the movies arc.
Earl Grey.
Billy has 25 self-stealing symbols that he needs to trade with a non-Federation species using a different currency. What does Billy do?
The Orb.
They've already been kind of to that next step. I mean, he massages her all the time and helps her out of the tub again.
He knows that she has rashes on her thighs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, so...
To the journey! You know, talk about a heavy-handed message.
Like, literally, on your back!
Like, literally, on your back. Like, I want you to feel the weight. You know, like, this, like, this is the kind of non-subtlety that makes it fun. Warp 5.
The fact of the matter is, Bakula is playing this character just as he should. It's true that Archer seems a bit uneasy, lacking in confidence. But he's the first human captain to see these strange new worlds.
The Ready Room.
I haven't gotten to the point in my research where I'm that caught up. I mean, I'm very much stuck right in season one of Next Gen and kind of have blinders on everything else right now. Yeah, boy, tell me about it.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
And we have kind of reached a milestone here, a little earlier than you might think we would have reached that milestone. This is the final episode of Star Trek for which we have a writing credit given to Gene Roddenberry.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
And he wanted it, the first part to be called Becoming Houdini, and the second part to be called Being Houdini.
Should have been called Houdini Begins.
Yes.
And Houdini Rises.
Yes.
Melodic Treks.
At only 22 years of age, he conducted the Munich Symphony Orchestra using 110 pieces, a 60-piece choir, and a 30-piece children's choir. Sometimes you need the children to get them high notes.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We are available on pretty much any platform you can possibly think of. I mean, it's impossible not to get our podcasts at this point. Is it fair to say that?
I think it's pretty fair. If you want to listen to us, you will be able to easily find a way.
So before we go, we ought to mention an iTunes review because we have a new one. And so many thanks to XRansom, nice username, for leaving us 5 stars and writing a short review. And we're glad you found Trek FM. And we've got tons of Trek talk for you. None of it would be possible without our sponsor. And so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
Now, on top of our sponsor, we ought to mention a new thing that we have going at Trek FM, and that is Patreon. If you go to trek.fm/Patreon, there is an awesome list of things and ways that you can help support us with a monthly subscription and get you little perks as being a part of the Trek FM family and help keeping us afloat. I don't want to go through the whole list here, so I just want to mention one more time, patreon.com/trekfm, and check out that. And if you're interested, please subscribe, become a monthly donor, and help us out. We would appreciate it very much. Now, next week, what are we up to?
What we're doing is something that we love to do. It's kind of going back to our roots because it was one of the first things that we did, and that is an episode commentary. That's right, people, an episode commentary. And we do these things so that you can listen to it and not watch it and still enjoy listening to it. But if you want to watch the episode or listen to us, it enhances the experience even more. And the episode that we're doing is The Raven.
I have Edgar Allan Poe automatically in my head. I'm going to read some poetry this week, get myself in the mood. Maybe that's going to help out with the spooky element, too, and get me geared up for Halloween.
And this was directed by Star Trek alum LeVar Burton.
Well, how about that? There we go. It all ties together, people.
It all comes together.
All right. Well, that's next week, though, so you got to wait until then. And so for now, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!